From KCRW in Santa Monica, this is The Treatment.
Welcome to The Treatment, which you can also hear at KCRW.com. I'm Elvis Mitchell, and it's been an interesting trip for my guest writer-director, Garth Jennings, to go from a big studio movie as his first film and a much-loved adaptation of Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy to a small and obviously very personal movie that I saw at the Sundance Film Festival last year. Who would think you'd get a coming-of-age comedy set in the 80s out of a film titled Son of Rambo? But he managed to do that.
Yes, it's a weird one. It always made sense to us when we were making it. But and it does to the audiences when they see it. But I think part of the problem with it may well be that people have no idea what to expect when they go in to see it.
I saw the movie last year, the very big screening at Sundance.
Yeah.
And you were saying you guys just got the movie finished, basically, right?
Oh, well, for that festival, that was going to be the first time it ever screened to the public because we'd made this movie independently and we'd only just finished the print 7 days before we left. So we'd only seen it once finished. And we weren't sure about it because when you do the mixing stage, the final technical aspect of the process is the sound mix. And it kind of kills any sense of joy and wonder you may have had in your film because it's so laborious. And you lose all sense of objectivity. So we were very worried about how it would be received. And then when we got to the festival, I was terrified. And Nick as well, when we stood on the stage and introduced it, sweating. I've never been so nervous.
And Nick's your partner. You guys
yeah.
work together in
Nick
Hammer and Tongs.
Exactly. Hammer and Tongs has been going for years now, since we left art school. And we do everything together. But we sat down and within about 10 minutes, it started, you know, we realized the audience was enjoying it and enjoying it for the reasons we'd hoped they would. Do you know what I mean? And then bit by bit, we realized it was working. We were wrong. It still had what we were after. And, it's just the best night of my life, really. Well, one of them anyway, because it was this thing we started working on this 8 years ago and it was very, very hard to get it made. And we felt really rewarded by the fact that we weren't crazy, that when people had sort of said we were to try and make this.
So this is going to be your first film project
before
Hitchhiker's Guide.
That's right. You're absolutely right. We'd got it already, actually. We'd finished the script and we'd even begun casting and searching for finance when we were offered the Hitchhiker's Guide. And initially we thought we just want to make Son of Rambo. We don't want to do a big studio film. But then when we read the script, we were reminded that this was the stuff we grew up with. We realized after talking to the studio making it very clear that they wanted an honest, you know, a heartfelt, a genuine import. They didn't want it to feel like they'd made it. And I sat down with Douglas Adams's family and we talked about how we wanted to make the film and the vision we had for it. And they agreed. And
Were you worried about that? Because that's a book that people feel like they own. I mean, it means more to people than anything else in science fiction.
Yeah, absolutely. And we felt the same way about it. In fact, that was our initial reason for wanting to reject it. It was like, well, why is this coming from a studio? They won't know what to do with it. We won't read it. For 2 weeks, it just sat on our desk. Then when we read it, we realized, hang on a minute, this is gold and an amazing opportunity. And once we knew that what we had in our heads fitted with with what the family would want from it, and the studio as well, it became the most extraordinary, wonderful process. I knew we weren't going to get in everything that all the fans like, because there's so many different versions of this thing, and there's so many different things in each version that people have their own favourite bits. But Douglas had written the most brilliant script and had even invented new stuff just for the movie. And we felt like as long as we celebrate this and we do it with the right sense of humour, and the right kind of, you know, we felt so affectionate towards it that if that comes through, that's our job done, you know. That's why we started with a great big sing and song and dance number, because that was never in any of them.
Yeah.
But it was like, this sort of lets people know it's going to be different, but we love this thing. And I think we're very proud of it. We're very proud of the work we did on it.
It's The Treatment. I'm talking to Garth Jennings, who directed Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. His new film is Son of Rambo. You should tell the audience what it's about if you can pitch it to me.
Shall I try pitching it?
Yes, please.
All right, well, it's set in the early 80s in England. And it's about two boys that become friends through the making of their own home movie sequel to Rambo. They've just seen First Blood and it's inspired them to make their home movie. The problem you have, though, is that one of the kids comes from a very religious family. They have a very strict moral code and the religion is called the Plymouth Brethren, which is prevalent in the UK. And they are forbidden to watch any TV or any movies, pop music, all that sort of stuff. And this
is essentially like what we have, the Calvinist Church here in the United
States. That's right, yes, it's very similar. And what happens is the first film this kid ever sees is a pirate copy of First Blood. And you can imagine that has quite an impact on this already we've established he's a very imaginative little boy. So it's like a great thunderbolt to his brain. And he teams up with this rather despicable rogue called Lee Carter, who's like the school, just the school pain in the neck. And this kid is making, when we first discover this boy, he's making his own little insect snuff movies. And he hires our little innocent hero to be his stuntman in his film. Well, their friendship starts to blossom and the film starts to become more and more ambitious and wonderful. And
you even find a nice thing to say about French teenagers who smoke, which is kind of shocking to
me. Yeah, well, that's
the
thing. You see, it's really a story about their friendship. And their friendship is tested by the arrival of the French exchange party, especially Didier Revol, who is the uber cool sort of peacock, Pied Piper of the story. And it was amazing because we actually found a 15-year-old boy from France to play that part, and he even brought his own cigarettes along to the casting. So I knew I had the right guy. It was really amazing, you know. It's like, yeah, you're hired. Yeah, it was great.
But what's fun about the movie, though, is that there's this real sort of, it feels very much like a DIY thing out of the 80s, you know what I mean?
Right.
That sort of spirit of like, try out anything.
Just do it. Well, I tell you what, before we even had the plot, before we even had anything really nailed down, we knew what we were trying to do was capture how great it was to be 11 or 12 years old and not have any fear of consequences. Never really worry about making any mistakes and never think that anything you'll do is too ambitious. I remember being that way and thinking that this
Were you a boy filmmaker? I mean, did you
Yeah, see... I was. Well, but this is what it was based on. When I was about 12, I did see First Blood. It was the first one I'd ever seen that was not meant for my age group. And it baked my noodle completely because this is a guy running around with just a stick and a knife, taking on 200 men. And he did it just by ingenuity and survival techniques. And he only kills one guy, and that's by throwing a rock at the helicopter and the guy fell out. It wasn't like all the bloodbath that followed in all the other movies. It was a really, I think it's a really good film. And as a 12-year-old who used to spend most of the time running around in the forest, this was, you know, awesome, to use the American phrase.
You used it very well.
Thank you. I did my best there. But it's really that made me make my first action movie with my dad's video camera. And we called it Aaron Part 1, and it was all very exciting.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
What was
it
about?
Well, I play the head of the Military of Defense, and I'm kidnapped by the PLO and taken hostage, and they threaten to torture me and burn me alive in my mum and dad's shed if the government don't come up with the money soon enough. So my good friend Aaron dons his headband in a Rambo-esque fashion, gets a knife, stuff, comes over, saves me, and beats up the bad guys. And what my parents must have, we didn't know what the PLO were. We just heard this name on the news all the time. We didn't really understand any of it. Well, that was the thing watching First Blood, of course. This is about an ex-Vietnam vet, you know, who's being rejected by the community. And I didn't get any of that. All I could see was a guy who could sew up his own arm. You know, when you're that age, you see things differently.
And he blended into the forest, which is what you wanted to do in your movie.
I want to blend into the forest. I want to be able to hide like that. And it's quite funny because that was one of the things we realized when we look back on our childhood. We realized there's an awful lot of things we didn't realize. And the film had to have that. We wanted to make sure the film captured those
things.
Was
that the first American film that really caught your fancy?
Well, no, because the first one I ever saw was Star Wars. I mean, we grew up on American films, although we never thought of them as being American. They were just films. Do you know what I mean?
Sure.
But yeah, everything. We were spoiled. We got all the Raiders and the E.T. and the, you know, you name it. It was coming out every year.
Because that was just the beginning of the kind of the resurgence of the British film industry. And I wonder if there were British films that kind of caught your fancy at all during that period.
There probably were. But the ones that made the biggest impact at that age, that early age, were the
big American action films.
Yeah, absolutely. Whereas pop music was coming from all angles, from England, from America, from anywhere in the world.
But certainly at that point, the end of the post-punk era and the pop era when you were growing up. I mean, that's when the Clash became a pop band, for God's sake.
Yeah, no, it was. I loved it. I mean, I had a really good time. And
but all that informs the movie, though.
Yeah, absolutely.
That conflation of British culture and American culture and just being, for our heroes, for the detectives, just this thing they consume, it's like candy to them.
Yeah, absolutely. You just, also, they take different things from it than you'd think children would take from it. Because, you know, everyone's so worried about kids, and rightfully so. You know, we have to watch out what they see and everything and not make them too desensitized. However, we saw these movies and just saw, we were just inspired by them. Even though they're kind of crazy movies, but...
Oh, they're very crazy movies.
Yeah, yeah. But, you know, it was trying to capture that. That was what Son of Rambo was all about. It was like trying to make a film that captures that spirit you know, and gives people that feeling at the end of the movie as well. That was, we were trying to get that across before we even had the plot or the characters. It was like, how can we give people this feeling that we have when we think back to our childhood? And so the story and everything was born out of that.
It's The Treatment. I'm Elvis Mitchell. My guest is Garth Jennings. His new film is Son of Rambo, his second film. It's fascinating to me that you got to make a film outside the studio system. I'm guessing it took a while to raise the money to do something like this because, as you're saying, how do you pitch it to people? In a way, it sort of relates because there's a real kind of handheld quality to all the videos you've done, especially the blur stuff. I mean, they all feel like they're made to be kind of intimate. I mean, the scale has always been like about
that. You always want them to be, you make stuff that's engaging. And the trouble sometimes if you make very, very polished, high-end stuff, that there is, especially if it's effects heavy without any plot or character, you feel quite distanced by it.
You know? I'm only guessing that you got into making the music videos you made as a kind of a response to the kind of stuff that was being made at the time.
Yeah, well, you can't help but want to do something different, especially as bands don't want to look like... most good bands don't want to look like other bands. Mm. They want to have their own thing and something unique that captures something about their song or about them. And I love that because it meant that we have to come up with something original, which is quite hard. And also, we would never go into it knowing how we were going to do it.
Is that true?
Well, it's ridiculous, really. It's a terrible mistake to make in many ways, business-wise. But you'd pitch something like, to Fatboy Slim, we pitched the idea of the evolution of man from amoeba through to a big fat guy. And then they said, great, we'll do it. And we just had no idea how we were going to make it. I had no idea. We realized immediately we couldn't do it, you know, in the Jurassic Park style with the computer-generated stuff. Then we ended up with a load of rubber fish and some photographs that the producer's sister had taken on holiday as backgrounds. And in fact, the producer's in it. He's Neanderthal man.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. No, he is. That's him in the prosthetics. It was. We're very much hands on, and we make up as we go along. And but trying to do the best we can. So it's not. It's not like we want it to look wonky, but we end up making things that people feel like. You know, it lets you in on the joke, I suppose.
Well, they're so kind of antithetical to that sort of sheen and that kind of sort of grim gloss that was even like other Supergrass videos, for example. They're very different from that.
Well, it is nice to be given the opportunity and the trust to do that stuff because it's their money and their record and it's their sort of band that you're playing with.
And so you're making a piece of something that's going to define that song for a lot of people forever.
Yes, you're right. And we always went into it very seriously. And we recognized the pressure. Even though it's only a music video, in the grand scheme of things, that doesn't amount to much. When you're doing it, you feel very, very responsible. So we're very lucky to have been given those opportunities, you know, to just do our stuff, basically.
But I'm guessing pretty early on you guys are getting film offers after the first few videos, weren't
not
you?
Not really. Well, there were a few, but they weren't very nice. You know, there were music video directors during our early part were getting the sort of films where they just want some flashy stuff, you know, fast editing. The whole idea that, oh, we must do cut films like MTV cuts music videos.
Which was not the kind of way you were making videos anyway.
No, didn't quite understand that. I tell you what, though, after that Blur milk carton video, we got so many scripts of walking, talking things. I remember there's one that was fridge. Honestly, we've all been spared. I've seen some of the scripts that were meant to be made. And honestly, it's upsetting. You know, there's fridge stuff. There was stuff in a junkyard. You know, it's like fruit and vegetables, biros, you know, you name it. We had it sent to us. Oh, you're the guys that do the walking things, you know. It's amazing how you get pigeonholed very quickly. Imagine getting pigeonholed as the milk carton guys. Jesus.
It's The Treatment. My guest is writer-director Garth Jennings, who made Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. His second film is the indie comedy Son of Rambo. More to come.
You're listening to The Treatment with Elvis Mitchell from the studios of KCRW Santa Monica.
Treatment, which you can also hear at KCRW.com. I'm talking to writer-director Garth Jennings. His new film is Son of Rambo. What I like about it is that there's a really playful feeling to it, even though when there's a lot at stake emotionally for both of these boys. I mean, because there is a lot. I mean, and in some way, Lee is kind of like Bart Simpson.
Right.
And so just to sort of see him having some understanding of the kind of damage he's possibly doing is a really interesting kind of point. But you don't make it too melodramatic at all. I mean, it's dramatic rather than melodramatic. And I just wonder how you were able to sort of – because there are several tones alternating throughout the film. It's a lot to take on.
Yes. I think that's what I want from a film, though. I want to have the whole – I want all the experiences. I want every button pushed. I just think we wanted – and if you're doing that, you can't push too hard, because the minute people start to feel like you're pushing too hard, they'll react against it, won't they? You know, if you feel like, oh, I'm supposed to feel sad here, he's really going for it, you instantly put up a reaction. And it's just a case of balancing it. And really the guide was to try and do this through the eyes of the kids in the film. Whether that informed the whole process, the way it was shot, the orchestral score, the pop, you know, every aspect of it was...
Even the way the camera is, I mean, a lot of the film was pretty, the camera's pretty low.
Low and wide.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, they're very short. but it's true. And everything looks really big. Even the hills they're running down at points, you know, everything was about finding that scale to how you remember it as a kid. And I think that goes for the emotional sides as well. And you're trying to, you know, as a kid, I wouldn't ever try and openly cry. Do you know what I mean? I'd always be fighting it back. And I think, you know, films often will go, right, this is the sad scene, he has to sob now. And actually, I find it far more realistic and far more engaging if I can see the character trying not to. Do you know what I mean?
Sure.
This is a small point, but it's...
Especially if you're a little boy, the last thing you want anybody to do...
You don't want people seeing you cry. Yeah. And it's amazing how when people see that in the film that they, you know, they can see him struggling, and it touches a chord with many folks that have seen it. But yeah, you're just trying to give both sides to each character and not make anyone too one-dimensional. I think that helps. I think if people feel like they're seeing a rounded person behaving in a way that they expect them to behave, then they'll go with it.
Because it could have easily been, and I almost wanted your conception, these boys could very, very easily been archetypes, you know, because they're so different that you're sort of creating these opposing poles that you sort of see what brings them together.
Yeah.
And you can't just make it the word they're like one side and they complete the other. They've got to be people... characters first and foremost, don't they?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's lovely thinking back to when we were kids and the friends we had and how you see something one way as a kid and it's different when you look back on it. Like, I remember one of my friends, his parents were never around. I don't know where they were, but we used to think this was the luckiest kid in the world because he could stay up all night. His brother let him do whatever he wanted to do. And we used to get to stay over there all the time thinking, wow, my house was like that. When you look back, of course, it was not like that. It was clearly a really big issue. And he was dealing with it brilliantly, this little chap, when I think of him. And the same goes for a lot of my friends. You know, I was very lucky. I had a very stable, very loving household. But some of my friends weren't that lucky. And I didn't realise that at the time. They were just my friends. They dealt with it. They just got on with it. But when I look back, I see that, you know, they were struggling with it as well. I just didn't recognise what those signs were at the time. I think trying to put that into the film balances it. It's never just one thing or another. There's always a hint of happy and sad at the same time.
But the thing that's really fascinating about this is that it's a movie that shows how much little boys of any era, but even in an era there's as much going on and there's as much kind of like sexuality everywhere, boys are still looking for heroes.
Yeah.
And that's the really touching aspect of the whole thing to me.
Well, yeah, I think so. And I don't know. I just remember the impact that had on me and just wanting to... I didn't want to do what Sylvester Stallone wanted. I remember actually thinking most of the time, even with people like Indiana Jones, thinking I wanted to be his friend. You know, I didn't actually want to be Indiana Jones. I wanted to be his go-to guy. You know, and that's what I remember loving about E.T. was... I wanted to have a friend like that.
So you wanted to be Elliot in E.T.?
Yeah, I really did. And just to have a secret friend or a powerful friend or a friend that could do stuff and I could do stuff with. I remember thinking that. So heroes, but not actually wanting to physically take their place, but just to run alongside them. That was always the deal for me. Yeah.
That's so funny because that's what the movie's kind of about too. And he wants to make the movie.
Yeah.
About this. He doesn't really want to be Rambo so much.
He wants to be son of Rambo. Yeah.
Yes. Yes.
And go and save his dad. Yeah. 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 Which is far more exciting. Yeah.
It's The Treatment. My guest is writer-director Garth Jennings, who made Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. His second film is the indie comedy Son of Rambo. But I guess I'm fascinated by, too, the fact that you use this as a way to sort of address all of the 80s and just how, again, we sort of remember I mean, as a kid, you sort of think about how sophisticated the rest of the world seemed to you, and just trying to carve out your own place. And it's bigger than their world. And just by seeing DDA in the film, you sort of think, wow, well, this is somebody who probably seemed like he was a grown-up to them.
Oh, absolutely. And I remember those experiences very clearly. The French exchange bus would turn up at our school.
Oh.
And these kids would get off and they would look so exotic and grown up by comparison, because there we were in our horrible little school uniforms, and they would be so colourful by comparison, and just the boys already had those little moustaches going on, and I, obviously this is just our minds playing tricks on us in many ways, but it was just that feeling of these are people that just blew our mind. You know, these were very strange relationships and situations, and they have quite a long lasting effect on me. Yeah,
it's a tribute, I guess, as writer director Garth Jennings. His new film is Son of Rambo. Now, how do you guys work as a team?
Oh, Nick and I work together on everything. We do every part of the process together.
Do you co-direct?
We don't co-direct. No,
okay, that's
when
I was
gets to the set, he's the producer and I'm the director. But we see it as a very important partnership. We don't understand how you can do it without that team. And it's very, he's looking at the bigger picture and I'm focused on what we're shooting. And we talk all the way through it. Obviously not through the shots, that would be a disaster. But you know what I mean? It's sort of, we're very big fans of prepping everything in advance. I storyboard the movies myself, and I spent 3 months doing Son of Rambo. It enables us to go through every aspect of it and then communicate that to the set and the crew and everybody. And so everyone knows what they're doing, and we've worked out the movie we want to make. So there's less room for surprises or, you know, there's always surprises and mistakes, but you've got a clear map of where you're going. That's what we like.
Well, I always wonder when there are partnerships and people work together for a long time, work very closely. I mean, I think you guys like sort of like Gottlieb and Krim in some ways, you know? I mean,
oh, that's a nice comparison.
Well, I mean, that's what came to mind for me.
We're not as good singers as them. They were. I love their songs, actually.
You were a 10cc fan?
Yeah, I like 10cc. I really like 10cc. My mum was is still a big pop music fan, and she used to play bands like that all the time.
But I think about that because those guys were that kind of team too, and you read interviews with them. In the interviews, they actually couldn't explain what the other did.
Those guys were amazing, and I think what I realized that Nick and I do have is a kind of we are different personalities. We don't just agree with each other at all. There's no sort of sycophantic. It's more like brothers. You know how testing brothers can be of each other, kind of prodding each other. There's just the right amount of a very friendly friction between us where we both want to make something good and we're both pushing each other to do it. And that can be very hard at times. It's hard work. We don't let up on each other, which sometimes I think we need to. But as a result, we make things that we're both very proud of. We're pretty thorough.
For me, just looking for that sort of where that comes from and what holds teams like this together, because, you know, the way you guys work, obviously, it's got you serve as catalysts for each other as well as sounding boards. And I just wondered how working in an independent film where you don't have the kind of financial resources where you've got to take advantage of everything and you know you've only got this location for this much time and you want to keep that kind. And what's great is the lighting in the forest is kind of like almost like a fairy tale version of Rambo.
Right.
I mean, it's not really like Rambo. It's like the way a little boy would want to see it.
That's it, yeah.
And I just wonder how much you guys talk that through and how much of the stuff you're finding in your role as a director versus what he gives you as a producer, but obviously a creative producer as much as kind of a line producer too.
Absolutely. He's really very much he's stopping me get going off the rails, I suppose, a lot of the time, because I'll get very focused on one aspect of the production. I'll start thinking, right, this, and seeing it through. And sometimes, especially when you're on the set, you can lose sight of the bigger picture or an opportunity that's floating around in the room, but you haven't noticed it because you're concentrating on this one aspect of it. And we work very well in terms of, I don't know, just he's very good at helping me if I've gone too far down one rope and missing something else, or if we're struggling to capture something we're after, having ideas outside of where I'm going. And Son of Rambo, it was just the two of us. We had no one to answer to. And in a way, that was quite a lot of pressure on us both, which is, again, I think why we prepared so meticulously for it.
It's The Treatment, which you can also hear at kcrw.com. I'm talking to writer-director Garth Jennings. His new film is Son of Rambo. One of the things that's kind of interesting to me in terms of doing an 80s movie is that you have to decide if you're going to how much fun you're going to make of the era.
Right. No, that's a really good point.
And you don't do that so much.
No. It would have been bad to... It's like anything. If you go too much in one direction, you know, it'll start to become annoying. And actually, I have to tell you, there are far more 80s sort of visual jokes that seem to have come out without my intending it to at all. Just because you'd write a very straight scene, two people in a car, one's on a mobile phone. And then the phone would be given on set and you go, that's not the phone, surely. And they go, yeah, that's the phone. It was a huge brick in his hand with this giant sort of telescopic aerial. And then when you cut to that, so when people see that in the film, they start laughing. And there's an awful lot of big hair and ludicrous outfits that I never intended to be funny, but that's how it goes. We were just trying to, even with the pop music as well, we had the music written into the script.
Okay.
We didn't want to just keep doing another song every 5 minutes and using a quirky intro that people hadn't heard for a while. Do you know what I mean? It's very tempting. But, you know, try and make all those elements serve the story and then people will enjoy that nostalgia rather than feel like, oh, yeah, here's some more nostalgia.
Yeah, or you also don't want the audience to feel that they're smarter than what's going on in the movie. Because
yeah.
If you're making fun of it, then they're not going to take these kids seriously.
That's really true. That's really true, yeah.
And that must have been, in terms of that preparation you're talking about, that must have been like a kind of an obstacle for you to sort of couch it in a way that people were affectionate about it, but they weren't thrown out by all these references to 80s material.
Well, I tell you what, I don't think we make many specific references to the... To the 80s. Do you know what I mean? There's no actual real big, you know, oh, look at the 80s, except for one scene where we really go for it. We sort of go the opposite way, where it's really slammed in your face, which is in the sixth form common room, which is out, you know, out for the older kids. The younger kids weren't allowed in, except in our movie they're allowed in because they're suddenly cool because they're making this film everyone wants to be in. And that was our little window of opportunity to just let all hell break loose. And it's sort of like an 80s explosion, really.
I've got to ask you, though, for a last question. Were you kind of – there must have been a point where you were this creative guy, this filmmaker kid, and suddenly girls find you interesting because you were doing this thing.
I so wish that were true. No, and I'm not being humble. I tell you what, if that were the truth, I would admit it right now. It was always a disaster for me, always been a disaster until I met my wife when I was about 23. And she's never been that interested in, you know, she helps out and she supports me. But she hadn't even seen Star Wars when I first met her. She can't possibly know what she's talking about. No, the girl thing was a disaster. Actually, do you know what the irony is now? Now I've been married for something like 7 years and I've got 3 children. I think now people are starting to take me seriously. I think now I could possibly cash in. But I can't. It's a disaster. Well, it all went round the wrong way.
Yeah. Well, Garth, I think I know what your next movie should be about.
Yeah.
Well, thanks so much for doing this. Please come back when you have another film, please.
I would absolutely love to. It would be my pleasure.
My guest is Garth Jennings. His new film is writer-director is Son of Rambo. Our technical director at KCRW in Santa Monica is Mario Diaz, with assistance from Lashik Wojcik at Carnegie Recording Studios. Bob Carlson is the editor. Gemma Dempsey is the producer. I'm Elvis Mitchell. It's The Treatment.
An audio archive of this and other programs can be found at kcrw.com. For questions and comments about The Treatment, please email us at thetreatment@kcrw.com. The Treatment is produced and distributed by KCRW Santa Monica.